Welcome, welcome, welcome to episode 5 of the Chikondly Podcast. I am your host, Demetrius Burton. Thank you so much, as always, for tuning in. First-time listeners, welcome to the Chikondly Experience. Returners, thank you for coming back. The intent for everyone is always to enhance the experience, your experience as well as mine, as we share knowledge with the hopes of helping every student athlete in your athletic program achieve at a high level. So having said that, today we would be talking about understanding clearinghouse rules, different systems of support, a sense of entitlement, and dare I say, resegregation. But joining me today to talk about all these wonderful topics, in my opinion, is Sherman Woodard. Please, please welcome Sherman to the show. Sherman, say something to the good people, please.
Oh, Brother Burton, thank you for having me here today. I appreciate it.
This has been a long time coming. I know this is only show number 5, but I've been wanting you on 1, 2, 3, and 4. It's just something about the knowledge you have, and I'm excited for you to share it with the people. In hopes of, again, the goal here at Chikondly is to make sure everybody, every player on your specific team is having that transformative experience. And soon to be Dr. Woodard has a lot of knowledge to drop in these areas we've talked about. So in this first segment, we're going to start off with understanding clearinghouse rules for colleges. So for student athletes, what do they need to know, soon to be doctor? Can I call you that, soon to be doctor? Would you prefer Baba Tunde? What you want? What you want to be called?
Yes, in these virtual spaces, I tend to go by Baba Tunde just to separate myself from any organizations and things. This is Baba Tunde speaking with you today, Brother Burton.
Now, you and I have a long history, and I know what Baba Tunde is all about. But we have some folk on here who may not. So if you would, take a couple of seconds and just share a little bit on the inside of Baba Tunde.
Well, Baba Tunde is the father returns. African culture belief that when a male dies, the next male child that is born is that father returned, and it's often given a name, Baba Tunde. In my sense, my grandfather, Sherman G. Woodard, died a few months before I was born, and they named me Sherman J. Woodard, hence Baba Tunde.
Names mean something. Names mean something. Whether you consciously choose it or not, names mean something. So Baba Tunde, welcome to the Chikondly Podcast. Thank you for being a part of the experience. Thank you for being willing to share your knowledge. And just to get right into it, in your professional life, one of the things you do is you run a guidance counseling department at a local high school here in the area. So you, more than anybody, are apt to talk about the clearinghouse rules. Would you please do so?
Thank you. I'd love to. First, in my early years as a counselor, I was actually in charge of the clearinghouse. As the director of the student service, I have a counselor that's in charge of the clearinghouse. So I say that to say that I'm going to speak on some of the rules and understanding, but it's important for coaches to understand or have communication with the guidance or student service department, have a structure set up to explain the clearinghouse, understand the clearinghouse in their school system. But I'll go over some things. But before we get into clearinghouse, Brother Burton, I think it's important that we understand that an athlete that is needing to complete the clearinghouse is talking about competing at the Division I or Division II level, which is a gifted and talented student athlete. And I frame it in that manner because gifted and talented is supported in our schools. And often here on your podcast, we say it's important for us to understand how do we view our black student athletes? How do we really see them? And maybe wonder, do we really see them as gifted and talented? I'm talking about the clearinghouse eligible or students going through their process. And I think we do. I think we do see them as gifted and talented. But the next question is, how do we support? How do we support them? Do we support them like we support our students that are scoring 1600s on SATs or knocking this test out the water that's provided with some of the best teachers in the building, so provided with small class sizes, provided with tutoring, provided with leadership opportunities. So now moving to the clearinghouse This is for our coaches. Your athlete has to.
Wait, hold on, Coach. You just gifted and talented, which for those of you who don't know, is a section of exceptional needs. Most people who think of exceptional needs in special ed tend to think of folk who specific learning disabilities, emotional disabilities, and they tend not to think of folks, students who are identified as gifted and talented as receiving those same supports as aforementioned students. Having said that, athletic ability was once classified as a gifted and talented, classification? Yeah, I said it, but that's my question.
Yes, that's correct. The gifted and talented was it's still fairly broad. I mean, for some reason, as the schools, we focus just on the how strong test scores, but creativityness is still in the definition. High leadership capacity is still in the definition. But some reason, we've narrowed it down to how strong these certain tests. But yes, athletic ability was originally, I think, I don't want to make up, 1968, 1978. I think Bonner does a study, comes out of Maryland, that talks about the federal laws and how it's changed and minus the athletic ability, because the argument was made that athletics, those students are supported. And we generally see them being supported, but it's how they support it. I mean, our teachers, or we provide more support, or we just let them slide through the hoops, if you understand what I'm saying. Are we giving them more challenging courses and providing tutoring supports and times and structures so they can be prepared to do work at the college level? And that's the next level of it's getting them to the universities to play these sports, but it's also having them prepared to get through the university. Now, when we look at getting to the university.
Okay, hold on, please. And I promise we're going to get to the clearinghouse rules.
I'm just anxious. You got me ready to go over here. I'm sorry.
But I got a question. Athletic ability was once considered gifted and talented. And stereotypically, when you talk about an athlete, chances are a black face comes to your mind. So if we had these athletes, in quotations, air quotes, labeled as gifted and talented, we could probably increase, let's say in a school of 3,000, the population of gifted and talented, what we were talking about, maybe 200 kids, 300 kids maybe, identified in the school, with 10%, what?
I think 10% is a fair number to.
So right now, 10% of gifted and talented, based on the law, it's just wiped away because they get support elsewhere. And that's the justification.
Correct. So it's not just the justification, it's the expectation as well. So I'm not that upset. I think that it's been removed, but the reason it's been removed is under the microscope now. I mean, are those proper supports? Are we viewing them, communicating, treating them as a jewel, as we recognize other gifts and talentedness? Is what necessitated the need for the clearinghouse, because they said, hey, you know, used to be the day of the dumb jock. I mean, that has to be out with the window now. I mean, the hurdles that Division I, Division II athlete have to qualify for are beyond that for to get accepted to local colleges, right, here in Indiana, at least.
So the idea of a dumb jock is just dumb. That doesn't exist.
Well, not at the college level. Right. I mean, we got a lot of athletes at the high school level who isn't dumb, but who haven't been properly challenged as you communicate through your podcast.
Okay, I took us a little bit on a tangent, and I apologize about that, but it's my show, so I can do whatever I want, right? Having said that, what must coaches know in order to properly support? What must students know in order to properly advocate, and what must guidance counselors know in order to properly support student athletes?
The coaches have to know how to identify students that are most likely to be recruited at this level early on in the process. Early on in the process, I'm talking about middle school. I mean, and they know, I mean, it's They know, generally. Now, some it's late bloomers that come along, but generally, and they have to have an identification process. And then they have to know the grade course requirements and that is a slide scale. And they don't have to know the specifics, but they know you have to have a, if you have a 3.5 GPA in core courses, 16 courses, but if you go by semester, it's 32. Right. The GPA that the student actually earns in those 32 core courses, I'm talking English, math, science, social studies, and world language, those are the only ones that count. And so that's four per semester or four per year if it's total courses that are very, very important. If you have to have a 2.3 to qualify, if you got below a 2.3 in those core courses, you're going to, I think he's called Prop 48 when he was growing up, but it's red shirt. But I mean, coaches stop looking at you unless you're like ridiculous, 8 feet tall or something.
or shoot half.
Right. But the lower your core GPA, the higher your SAT or ACT score had to be. So if an athlete has a 3.5 in those core courses, then they don't have a 400 on the SAT, or 37, I believe, in the ACT. Again, it's all on the Clearinghouse website. Your guidance counselor should be aware of that. So the coaches have to be able to identify. But bigger than that, communicate these goals all over the place to everybody, these targets. I mean, because so many of these young guys want to go on and say, this is step one. This is step one. If you saying, hey, I'm going to be a pro this, you have to go to college. And you have to have these benchmarks. And most of the former athletes that have been in the program for that, most those grades, those are coming. This guy here that you look up to, want to be, he made those grades. She made those grades. Them, however you identify, made those grades and got to this level, along as having the talent to do that. And the counselor, the guidance department has to be aware of any changes. They have to submit courses, any new courses, so it lines up with the courses that student athlete is taking. I mean, you may offer a new class, and it's very rigorous college scoring, but if it's not submitted to the clearinghouse, then it doesn't count. But that's why it needs to be someone in the guidance, the student service department, that has a clear understanding of that. The athlete,
Can I interrupt for 2 seconds? Has it been your experience that every guidance counselor department has that person on staff that knows the clearinghouse, has systems in place to ensure that kids are adequately processing through it?
I really don't have data on that.
My question was your experience, just based on what you've seen.
Just anecdotal data, I really don't know. I would assume, I mean, the clearinghouse has counselor things, so I would assume, I mean, the transcripts go from it, so I would assume that someone in the student service or guidance department has a login and all that for that. But I mean, I don't know, school may move those duties to the athletic department or something of that nature. So, but I would assume so, yes.
Well, coaches, if you are struggling with some of these questions about clearinghouse and you aren't getting satisfying answers from your institution, please reach out to Chikande. We do have a expert in residence who can answer any questions, and we can offer any supports to make sure that your student athletes are getting the opportunities, one, they want, and two, they deserve. So please reach out if you got any questions.
I'll say on that, Brother Burton, is that because what the schools probably don't have is someone that's over the program that views us as a gifted and talented student athlete. And then how can I set them up with supports as that? I mean, to know these rules and to put the student in classes is checking off. But the support, the type of supports that you kind of talk about is necessary for many students to succeed, is what's missing from many schools. And it's because of the lens that they may be viewing some of these apps. I got to do all this extra stuff for this person because he know how to, like, throw 90 miles an hour.
Another example of a paradigm shift that's included in the Chikande experience. We view student athletes, we view all of humanity as special, but we view exceptional athletic ability as a gifted and talented status, and that's the paradigm we operate from. that does not make the student athlete any better, any more valuable of a human being than any other, but you recognize the class of gifted and talented, then you give those proper support just as you would give somebody with a, I don't know, a 180 IQ or a genius.
Or 70 IQ, because like you said, it's under that umbrella of.
Absolutely, absolutely. Design programs specific to the child. That's what it's all about. Right. That's what it's all about. Great information on the clearinghouse. Anything else before we wrap up segment one?
This is for the student. So it's upon the student and the family. They have to register for the clearinghouse. They have to go to the website. And information, I read it on the website. I think it takes about 45 minutes. You can come back if you need to save it. And they'll have to pay. I don't know what the fee is now, but a lot of students qualify for free reduced lunch, would qualify for a waiver there. And then when the student takes the ACT or SAT, they have to send their scores. They can send it to, you know, a certain amount of colleges for free. And one of the places they have to send it is to the clearinghouse. And all that's on their website. But before that, student athlete can do an official college visit or sign of intent. They have to have that, be registered there. And then when their school sent transcripts, is all individual. I mean, I don't see a reason to send a transcript early, especially if the student athlete needs to work on retaking courses. So right. To the student athlete, hey, if you know, at the end of your sophomore year right now, and college is looking at you, and you know that, man, I got a 2-3 GPA, you need to get the GPA up. Summer school coming up, retake a course or so that in math, English, science, social, world language that you know you should have did better in, and take these grades seriously and understand that C's hurt you. A C is a 2.0. A C does not help you. A C does not help you make a 2.3. Which is the minimum. We want to get a 3.0. You talked about the B minus average. Actually getting a range in there is a very normal SAT score. By the way, the 3.5 means all you got to do is show up and take the test for the SAT. Mm. I mean, that 400 is the bottom score.
Right. Oh, y'all can imagine our conversations off air. Because the brothers just dropped so much knowledge and I just have a lot of follow-up questions. But I promise I won't ask all the ones that ran through this big head of mine. But I will say, whether you are a coach in the guidance counseling department or a parent or student athlete and you need support because you have questions and you keep having questions, clearly part of the Chicani experience is Dr. Woodard helping out. So please reach out. And again, the idea is for us to enhance the experience. We are not looking to create conflict or create chaos. We're looking to assist everybody to ensure students have access to those life transformative experiences so that they can be who their creator designed them to be. So please, this is not us coming in to dictate what to do. This is us letting y'all know that we can help, and we can help, all right? And the idea is to do that. You're doing some great things. Let us partner with you to do some greater things. We reached out to the coaches. We reached out to the counselors. We reached out to the student athletes and families. All of y'all have a part to do. All y'all have a part to do. And if you need any assistance in getting any of it done, please reach out. Those of you still with us, thank you for doing so. We are the Chikandi Podcast, and I am here with soon-to-be Dr. Babatunde, who has been so generous to share some of his knowledge and experience around the NCAA Clearinghouse and what, you know, teachers, coaches, and players and families should know. So again, if you have any questions or comments on how Chikandi can help you in that area, please reach out. All right, Babatunde, I want to talk to you about this idea of resegregating schools. Should we go back to segregation? And the reason I posed this question, a podcast was shared with me, and it included scientific studies, a group of doctors and a group of teachers in students and patients were studied, of course, and basically found that race-based preferences existed, were had. Black patients preferred black doctors, black students, and black teachers, and the same thing for whites. You are earning your doctorate in the area of urban studies, correct?
That is correct.
So you have some in-depth knowledge and experience about school segregation and desegregation, correct?
Yes, sir.
I've kind of stirred the waters a little bit by going on record by promoting, in a sense, resegregated schools, that black boys tend to do better with black male teachers, and as much as possible, they should have them. And not every black teacher qualifies, because you got some black teachers who, you know, are white supremacist sympathizers, and they inflict the same pain that racist teachers do. But I'm talking about in general, black boys tend to do better with black teachers. What have been your experiences?
I'm gonna go back first to what you talked about, the podcast, and where likes preferred, like white doctors, patients, et cetera, teachers. Everything we prefer ain't what's good for us, though. You have to agree to that, right? I prefer a lot of sugar in my coffee right. and everything.
I don't prefer that, but I'm with you. Everything we prefer ain't good for you.
In this instance, however, I think there's an abundance of research that also shows that achievement is obtained. Success is attained. So in the counseling realm, generally speaking, and it's related to racial identity, but generally speaking, blacks prefer black therapists and report better success with black therapists. So not just prefer, but report better success in test scores in elementary school, especially for black and brown students when paired, or significant gains, even when the teacher in the variable is rated low. So the teacher might not even be that good, but that is the same, he or she the same race, positively in a significant way affects academic achievement.
So in essence, you would be for segregating schools too. Did I just hear that?
Well, first I got to start off with thinking on Brown versus Board of Education when the public school system was legally supposed to be desegregated.
What year was that?
59.
Okay.
I believe, I have to Google it.
Probably right now.
So just think, so we had separate but equal at that time, and the powers that be, white supremacy, was not equally funding black schools. And so we had a group of people, white people in power, that said, hey, we're not going to follow the law and equally fund schools, because the same ideology of these people are less, deserve less, or less than human. And what we decided to do was say, we'll get you back. We'll force you to teach our kids. And we're going to call that equality.
So we sent our kids to be taught by the enemy to show them we are in control.
I can't make sense of it. I really can't make sense of it. I know it's in the bigger framework of wanting to deseg, you know, capitalism and all the likes, but the argument that we as blacks made was that the segregated institutions were providing the inferior education.
Right.
Not that the inferior funding was causing, or that the viewing of black people as less was causing.
Right, the dehumanization.
Right. And so, particularly for me, at the elementary age, at the elementary schools, it had a great benefit for the black community in America as a whole if those schools were segregated. What we have now, since the Board of Board of Education, the schools are segregated. Schools are more segregated today than they were before the Board of Education. The difference is, this one had a majority of black teachers teaching black kids, all white teachers teaching white kids, and now we have a way more diverse United States of America with Asian and Indian and Hispanic and Latino, Latinx, etc. But our schools are 90% black or 90% brown, and the difference today, though, is I like to call it apartheid, because 90% of the teachers is white now. Kung Ju Fu said 83% middle-class white teachers and whatnot, but.
So in a sense, desegregation has already been resegregation, just made the look difference.
Right.
So you return it apartheid because schools are still segregated, but instead of the black teachers teaching black students, you now got white teachers teaching black students.
Correct.
In most instances.
Correct. Because we've seen those communities where the white flight happened, where the schools that black children bus to, most of those communities, the middle class whites have large part left those communities, and upper mobile blacks have moved into those, and home values have either stayed the same or declined at that same amount of time.
So when we talk about developing a positive identity specifically for black male students, but just black people in general, to me it seems impossible for someone who generally views a student in a less than human way to uplift, even as well-intentioned as they may be.
Yeah, that's the challenge. That's the challenge because, I mean, you had a lot of good people in education that do care and do love the kids that they work with. Don't get me wrong, you got a small percentage of just not just racist. You know, I mean, there's clearly racist.
Where
you know,
were the badge of pride?
Yeah, right, you know, but for majority, that's not the type of person that goes into education in the urban areas, in my opinion.
Nor is this message for them.
Right.
We're not trying to appeal to anybody except for, no, we are trying to appeal to folks with like-minded souls who want to uplift humanity, but we just choose to specifically start with the brothers.
Yeah. And so you go into education. I'd say myself as a black man, I went into education with the sense that I was going to be able to share information to help fix these kids. It was early on in my education when I learned that, man, how was this system that was broke, how this was set for these
kids. Are fine, relatively speaking.
Right. What were you talking about? I remember talking about white teachers. I forgot.
No, there's some good white folk out there.
I want to say. I mean, so they go in, but they done bought into. I mean, they've been taught, they've been educated. This blacks is less or whatnot. You see, and so it's hard to see. So it's not like an indictment on them. It's where we are. And so you got all this diversity training and things or whatnot that some buy into and some move in the direction. We in a crisis. We ain't got time to be fixing teachers. We got kids and babies. We got the next generation coming along that's sick. We got to abort a plan that does not work for our community. And we need to organize around creating elementary schools that are culture specific. Now, the parents should have choice. I mean, every black, so I know some black people out there, heck no, I ain't sending my kids, school all them black kids, you crazy. And more power to them.
So, what does this have to do with Chikandi and the four-phase protocol enhancement and the program enhancement plan? Identity. All goes back to the identity. And what I mean by that, what do you believe? What do you believe about your student athletes? We talked about segregation. We talked about the white flight that led to it. And we also talked about the low number of black teachers, which creates a system of apartheid, as Babatunde said. What is the solution? Well, our proposed solution for those folks, and there are three types of folks when it comes to racism, in my opinion. You have the conscious supporters, who Sherman just talked about. Our message is not for you, if that's how you identify. You have the unconscious supporters, the people who recognize they've been brought up and inherited a system of oppression, and they blindly support it, blindly mean they don't know how to do anything else, and they want to do something different. And then you have the revolutionaries, people who are consciously fighting, consciously living liberated lives as opposed to lives where oppression is a part of it. So where do you identify with? And based on what you believe and how you act determines where you are and not where you say. But if you understand that you grew up in a sick culture and you were infected and you're looking for the antidote, we can help. We can help. We aren't anybody's saviors. We don't fix anybody. Ain't none of y'all broken. We're all just on a journey. We're all having an experience, a human experience. And we just want to do our part to help. So when we talk about resegregating schools, it's not a segregation based on hate. We're trying to avoid a certain people. We're trying to get away from the people because they're less than and they're going to infect us. It's with an understanding that at certain times of development, and especially in our race-based society, where one group has been dehumanized, when you talk about closing achievement gaps, and I don't subscribe to that terminology, but a lot of people do, but when you talk about a closing achievement gaps, this apparently is one way to do so.
Yeah, I appreciate that you framed it in such a manner, because I truly believe, like, I mean, Dr. King and others, that a radically healed race of black people is what it's going to take to move America in a more humane manner. And I'm not talking about resegregating all the way throughout. There should be options for that if families want to, but I don't know if that would be the best meaning. I don't think you should go to, I mean, I think it could be, you went to all black school, elementary school, all black high school, then all black college. I mean, you live in America. You don't have to have contact. Well, maybe it could be beneficial to have contact outside.
I live in Atlanta. You ain't gonna be
right, I believe our information is partial, and political. You know, so, but this is my belief that the resegregation is very, very important at the elementary age when you're developing an industriousness versus inferiority, identity. You have to believe in yourself, and you have to believe in people that look like you. You have to be taught that, hey, this is what we've done, this is what we've overcome, this is the journey we're on. And then I'm very for it after that development, a diverse range of options, which includes desegregated schools and things. Because now when I run into a teacher or a curriculum that I don't see myself in, I realize what's going on. I can communicate that to the school, to the teacher, to the class, and we all can learn and grow together, whatnot. But you throw me in that environment and I don't have my self-development, then it just
reinforces that dehumanization. Right. You mentioned earlier Brother Dr. Kung Jufu, and he also read him fourth grade failure syndrome, third, fourth grade failure syndrome. And he talked about industriousness and that being a critical time when kids figure out if this formal education thing is or isn't for them. You and I have talked about, and I just want to put it out there, that probably the third and fourth grade teacher is the most critical teachers, are the most critical teachers in the formal education. It is then when that's that make or break year.
Oh yeah. I don't know if this is about coincidence, but I mean, they say if you ask people like, what's your favorite teacher? Most of them are gonna be a third or fourth grade teacher, but that's also the time we develop in favorites and things. It's also the age where first time really identifying with somebody outside of our home, mm-hmm. or whatnot. And that's why I believe it's critical for that teacher to oftentimes look like,
right,
at least in one of those grades, right. looks like me a little bit, like, oh, okay, you know, so I can be Mr. Burton up in here. But
two black teachers in my elementary school, Miss Nichols, the fifth grade teacher, Mr. Cox, the gym teacher.
Right.
The black man in my elementary school was, for all intents and purposes, an athlete, a gym teacher.
Right. So I was fortunate. I had two white teachers, kindergarten, first grade, second grade as well. Then third grade, I had a white male. And I think that junior, they helped me. Because, I had just that energy. I was a knucklehead kid. And he could identify with that male energy and help me through that. Then help me with a problem. Then had a black woman in fourth grade after that, which was very helpful as well. In that period, I had a black. But I went to a school that taught, you know, Jesse Jackson, Operation Push was in and had us chanting, I believe, I am somebody, et cetera.
I don't think that was happening in FWC, actually. Looking at
Right. I believe them, you know what I'm saying? Had me thinking I was somebody up in there, you know what I mean?
Jesse, what?
Right.
Man, Chikandi means love, and it's with love that we come to you with these conversations, these discussions, these ideas, these solutions. So if you want to join us on the Caravan of Love, join the Chikandi experience. Stay tuned for the last segment where I will end with a call to action and maybe a little teaser for the next show. There will be a part two. We are going to have Dr. Woodard back. So I guess the teaser is now. But do sit back for the call to action and to wrap it up to this show. But before we do,
I can't be Dr. Woodard. You can say soon to be, but I'm not Dr. Woodard. Just letting you know, letting the world know.
Thank you for that disclaimer. Yeah. Ain't no false flagging over here. No false flagging. That's keeping it real. All right, beautiful people. If you're still with me, thank you. It is much appreciated and much wanted. At this particular time in the show, we're going to wrap it up with a call to action. But before we do, extend another heartfelt thank you to soon-to-be Dr. Sherman Woodard, a.k.a. Babatunde, for joining me for part one of a two-session series answering the Chikandi mailbag. And that in itself leads me to the call of action. Please, please, please visit chikandi.net, C-H-I-K-O-N-D-I, and take the survey. And let us know what other topics would you like to hear soon-to-be Dr. Woodard and myself discuss.